The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to America's Web Radio. This is Ron Bachman, and you're listening to Healthcare Insight. For many of you who are regular listeners of Healthcare Insight, you'll know that over the last year or more, we have not been talking directly about health insurance or health care per se. We've been talking about the health of the country, foreign domestic policies. We've been interviewing individuals to understand some of the key players and power players in this country. But today I want to return to our roots of talking about health care and health insurance, because it looks as though President Donald Trump is going to be the Republican nominee, and a good chance that he may be elected to the presidency once again. If that happens and Republicans are pulled along with his voters into succeeding in the House and the Senate, there could be a massive change in control, which means we could get back to looking at what I'll call Trumpcare 2.0. Now, Trumpcare, as a general term, was used during his first presidency, where he was trying to change Obamacare in various ways. He couldn't get an overhaul of healthcare because, if some of you were around at the time or you're just a political junkie, you know that when the Trump proposals were going through the Senate, they needed one more vote to continue with the process and take it to a conference committee with the House. And that was the famous John McCain thumbs down, where he voted against it. He voted with the Democrats. It was a very slim majority the Republicans had, and they needed every vote. So because of John McCain, we never really got to take a look at or negotiate or discuss further healthcare reform and what it might look like under the Trump administration. So Trumpcare in general is just called how Trump tweaked to the benefit of consumers every place that he could without full legislation, how he could change in the regulatory interpretations of Obamacare, allowing more patient-centered coverages, allowing options for veterans to be able to choose where they get care if the Veterans Administration couldn't or didn't provide the care or wasn't doing it on a timely basis. He also expanded the opportunities for health savings accounts and a number of other areas where there was a significant change to the benefit of consumers and the benefit of having additional options that, which otherwise would have been denied under strict Obamacare regulations during the Obama administration. There were a lot of areas that were loosened up, even state variations that were allowed were considered more acceptable when Trump was in, to try some different alternatives and how they measured and how the whole concept of healthcare and the delivery of healthcare was provided. So we've done that. Trump did a great job when he was there within the limitations of the law that he had. Now with the potential of a Trump 2.0 presidency, I would like to have us today discuss the possibilities and what would look like a Trumpcare 2.0 as well. I also call that personalized health insurance, something that's unique to the individual, because I think what, as we go through and discuss personalized health care or Trump 2.0, you'll find that people really wouldn't have to settle for what is currently offered, that they could get health insurance they want and health care where they want it, all at an affordable price. Now, I think the real issue here is to think about the difference between health insurance, which is how you finance the health care that you get. So the two very different concepts to keep in mind, because they are interrelated and one affects the other one, but they are different concepts on what you would do to change the laws or the regulations around the delivery of health care and then the financing of health insurance. So what we want to do is we want to get away from just sort of the bumper sticker slogans that occur around health care debate and reform because I know that you and I and others looking for a better health insurance marketplace where we can buy the right health insurance that we want at an affordable price, we want solutions now. And I know that that has not always been the case where you can really expect something, but with the Trump administration on the horizon, or the potential of it at least, we have a chance to review health insurance and health care. Now, the real issue that we also want to talk about is the health insurance companies, because, you know, we do need a national conversation on health care reform. But insurance companies, they say they listen to their customers. But when was the last time you spoke to a health insurance CEO? I don't think that happens. If you try to meet with them, they're isolated in their large home office buildings with guards and security codes to keep people like you and me away. Just try it sometime. Walk into one of those granite edifices and ask to speak to a CEO and watch the verbal runaround and the access barriers that suddenly go up. So does that mean we're really totally helpless? No. We may be subject to the whims and the powerful elected and unelected officials and a dysfunctional insurance system, but I submit to you, we are not helpless. And the real key to not being helpless is this election that's going to be coming up in 2024. So here is the truth and how we can win. There are real solutions that can help you and your family. It's just that no one wants to talk about them. Keep this in mind. Most solutions that help consumers work against the interests of the lobbyists and the healthcare and the political establishment. So when you think things ought to be logical, that we can actually find solutions, recognize that there's an ingrained medical industrial complex that's pretty hard to break through. And it would take somebody with a creative mind and sort of the anti-establishment approach of a Donald Trump to actually create something that's new and different and that would benefit the consumer, because he's not beholden to the insurance companies. They give an enormous amount of money to the lobbyists, and they have an enormous amount of power in Washington, D.C. over congressional votes that might change their business model, change their market. They have to be made to do it by somebody who's more powerful than their lobbyists, and that could be a Donald Trump, who is willing and able and has shown a history of being able to be a disruptive force in things that would actually benefit the middle and lower income folks. So we can recognize that knowledge is power, and with knowledge you can use your two most powerful weapons, your voice and your vote. There's nothing would affect most politicians than having angry voters. Now, they've been able to bypass that because they rely more on money in many cases than voters, because they think they can buy your vote by having so many advertisements out there and trying to sound like they're really trying to help you, but they really don't. So I think we can make a significant change in here, because remember, just a few votes can change the world if you actually are informed and get out there and make the right kind of votes. Think back to the recent elections in 2000. George Bush won the presidency by 547 votes. They were these disputed hanging Chad votes in Florida, and ultimately a 5-4 Supreme Court decision on how to count those votes made the difference. In 2016, Donald Trump won the presidency by winning several states by only a few thousand votes. Remember, he also lost in 2020 by only a few thousand votes. If you add up those states that were so close, I think the total of what he needed in all different states was probably less than 25,000 votes in three or four states that would have changed the entire election and our entire history over these last 4 years. I don't think we would have the inflation that we have. We wouldn't have the government spending that we have. We wouldn't have two wars going on. We wouldn't have open borders where 300,000 people, illegals, crossing our border every day. So I don't think that consumers can be ignored for too long if, in fact, they get out as informed voters and can make a difference. Now, there are a number of main stakeholders that we need to talk about to bring together the kind of solution I'm going to offer during this hour. And the major stakeholders are the consumers. And what do they want? They want coverage for pre-existing conditions. They run increased choice, they want improved quality, and they want lower premiums. Pretty basic, pretty simple, that I think all of us can agree on. That's what the consumer wants. What about the uninsureds? The uninsured folks out there want guaranteed access to affordable coverage. Hospitals, where services are provided, they want to minimize uncompensated care. They don't want to have a lot of people coming in that really can't pay for their services that are being provided. So they have to write that off as uncompensated care, donations, if you will. Doctors, what do doctors want? They want tort reform. Those, the litigation that goes on in their practice, they have to charge more because they're a threat of lawsuits. And they want to lessen the defense of medicine. A lot of times they have to do things only to prevent a lawsuit, but they consider it preventive medicine rather than actually treating the patient the way they should be treated. They provide a lot of other services that are unnecessary, but it's defensive against lawsuits. What about insurers? What do they really want? Well, at the end of the day, other than the status quo that I mentioned earlier, what they really want are stabilized, a private health insurance market. They want to expand their client sales, and they want to be able to offer various product options and choices to the consumer. What about employers? Employers want affordable group health insurance. That's one of the key things for any employer to be able to recruit and retain and have a healthy workforce is to have affordable group health insurance. And what about agents and brokers who typically sell the products? Agents and brokers want more commission sales. They don't want to have free sales. They don't want to have some marketplace where they're supposed to give advice and guidance to customers, and they don't get any money for that. They're in a business. They need to be compensated appropriately. So imagine the peace of mind you would have if you could get health insurance that you want at an affordable price. Let's start this journey in a few minutes by discovering just how personalized health insurance or TrumpCare 2.0 would work. Learn what we can do now and what you can get when you want it. So let's take a quick break, and I want to come back and I want to explain a little bit more about TrumpCare 2.0 and how it can benefit you, how it can benefit your family, and quite honestly, how it can benefit the whole country with lower healthcare costs and better, more quality healthcare being delivered to individuals at the time they need it, where they need it, and how they want it, and give them choices on the types of services, the type of care that they want, the type of products that they can buy. So if you'll stay with me, we're going to take this quick commercial break, and we'll be right back and talk about TrumpCare 2.0.
Attention veterans, America's Web Radio has a contest just for you. We are giving away an AR-15 style weapon to a lucky veteran. If you are a veteran or active duty, you can enter for a chance to win by submitting an entry form at americaswebradio.com/giveaway. That's americaswebradio.com/giveaway. Please read the official rules for more information. Good luck, and thank you for listening.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
If you want the truth about politics, medicine, weapons, classic cars, and more, you'll want to tune in to America's Web Radio. You can listen to all of your favorite shows live at www.americaswebradio.com or on demand on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. That's www.americaswebradio.com.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to America's Web Radio. Today we are going to get into the possibility of a Trump administration. I'll call the administration Trump 2.0. And what I want to talk about today is entirely my suggestion as to where I would like to see that administration go in terms of Trump Care 2.0. So I want to describe that. It is not an official policy. It's not an official proposal of the Trump campaign or the potential directly for a Trump administration to install. But I want to lay it out, and I'm going to call it Trump Care 2.0. I don't think anybody else is using that term, and so I want to sort of label that, and I want to describe what it could be. And I'm ultimately going to put out a book that would be available on Amazon that would describe Trump Care 2.0. But let me, as a healthcare expert, as a consultant for almost 50 years in the business, I want to lay out what I think would actually work in very conservative principles, a restructuring of the marketplace, a restructuring of the ability to get the products that consumers want to be totally patient-oriented, patient-focused, and to strengthen the physician-patient relationship. So I want to speak a little bit technically for this segment, talking about from an insurance standpoint, what I will call risk segmentation. Now, before everybody falls asleep, we talk about risk segmentation. Let me explain that it's not that difficult. This is not rocket science. Yes, I am an actuary, and I've gone into risk segmentation and pricing. I have actually a recognition of being in the Hall of Fame for the Georgia State Risk Management Program, but hopefully I can simplify this because it's really not all that difficult. Just people try to make things like risk segmentation difficult when it doesn't need to be. So let me describe the whole idea of risk segmentation. Then we can talk about the solutions for healthcare that are surrounding this whole idea of risk segmentation. It is totally the opposite of Obamacare. Obamacare said everybody has got to be in the same bucket, in the same pool, whether you're healthy or you're not healthy, whether you have healthy activities of diet and exercise and taking your medications, whether you don't. You're going to get charged the same thing. And everybody is in one giant pot. So there's no reward or recognition under Obamacare for actually doing some of the right things, even if you're sick of trying to do things to get better, if your employer trying to promote healthcare activities within your company, whether it's rewards for exercise and diet, better lunches, healthcare information, education, all those things are totally discounted under Obamacare. So we don't get people trying to get healthy. We don't give them right information to get and stay healthy. Risk segmentation is the opposite. Risk segmentation takes a look at the individual and says, what is your problem? What is your risk of getting sick? What is your risk since you are already sick? What's your risk of staying sick or getting worse? Or what's the risk reduction of getting better? So that's what risk segmentation is in sort of the elevator discussion. But let me get into a little bit more detail so you can see what I'm really talking about. And I'll classify risk segmentation into four buckets. So we have four buckets rather than one giant bucket for everybody. And the four buckets I'm going to talk about will recognize the uniqueness of every individual. So as you think through this as listeners, think about which bucket you might fall into, and then we'll see how you might be able to access better health care at lower prices on your health insurance, regardless of which of these four buckets that you fall into. The first bucket would be what I would call catastrophically impaired risks. What are catastrophically impaired risks? Well, they're things like people who already have cancer, a rare disease, they have a head trauma, or burn victims. So those are just a few examples of what I would consider catastrophically impaired risks. Those are people already have that, or ultimately down the road, people who may fall in that category. But let's just take the current population and say there are a lot of people out there with catastrophic impaired risk, and we'll talk about how many there in fact are in the country around that bucket, if you will. The second is what I'll call chronic and persistent illnesses. They're different than catastrophic. Chronic and persistent illnesses would be things like asthma, diabetes, heart disease, mental health conditions. Those are things that people have that are probably not going to get much better. You can stabilize them. You might be able to improve them a little bit, but you're probably not going to cure those particular issues entirely. Those are sort of lifelong, persistent conditions that you need to stabilize. But stabilizing those conditions, keeping people out of the hospital for those conditions, is dramatically lower cost than if we don't treat those people with those conditions appropriately and help them to help themselves. The third bucket I'll talk about would be at-risk acute conditions. Well, what does that mean, this third bucket, at-risk acute conditions? Well, those would be things like smoking, high blood pressure, overweight. You have a condition that may not be currently inhibiting you, may not be requiring you to go to the hospitalization, but you are at risk of getting much worse. And if you are being treated, it's what some would refer as acute as opposed to persistent. In other words, it's a one-time thing that might happen, and then you get back to being your normal life, but you'll have some intervening care periodically because of those conditions, but basically puts you at risk for much worse health care needs. Okay, what's the fourth bucket? The fourth bucket is people who are well. They're generally well. They're in good health. They take care of themselves. They basically have little to no claims whatsoever. They're very low risk in terms of their health status, in terms of getting worse or having to require some intervention. They have good nutrition. They watch their diet, and they have active lifestyles. So those are people that are well. So these are the four buckets. Let me summarize the four buckets: catastrophic, chronic and persistent, at-risk acute conditions, and wellness. So those are the four. Very, very different health status. If you fall into any one of those, your need for services, for medical care, for doctor's care, for medication, for treatment, for education about what your situation is very different than if you're in one of the other buckets. So four broad buckets. So we have some spreading of the risk among big populations of people that would fall into those four. But it gives us an opportunity to do education, training, prevention, wellness, well-being, all the terms that we want to use to help each and every one of those categories to lower their ultimate healthcare costs, to give them the care and treatment that they need today, not down the road when things get worse. Gives them a chance to be rewarded and incentivized to make those changes, to get that education, to see the doctor, to prevent themselves from having a hospitalization that would be much more expensive. So we take a look at these four categories. What percentage of the population would fall into those four categories? Well, on the first one, the catastrophic impaired risk, believe it or not, only about 1% of the population in terms of number of people, 1% of the population actually would have one of those catastrophic conditions, cancer, rare diseases, head traumas, burns, etc. But it does account for about 15% of overall claim dollars that are spent. So 1% of the population generates about 15% of the healthcare costs. Now, what about the second bucket, the chronic and persistent illnesses? Those are the asthma, diabetes, heart disease, mental health conditions. Well, the chronic and impaired, you can actually have a range within that. So there's sort of a subcategory there of low costs versus high costs. So if you're a diabetic, for example, and you've got a very maybe multiple conditions, you could be a very high cost chronic. But if you're maybe you only have one condition, you would have a lower cost. So on the high cost, well, the total, let me give you that first. The total is about 16% of the population that generates about 41% of the total healthcare cost. So 16% of the population in the second bucket that generates 41%. If you are pretty well stabilized and you'd be in the low cost part of that, that's about 12% of the population, and the high cost is about 4% of the population. And each of those percentages has about the same percentage of dollar claims. So 12% on the low side, if you're taking care of your chronic condition, generates about 21% of the claims. On the high end, about 4% are on the high end that are recurring and create all sorts of complications, maybe multiple comorbid conditions, creates about another 20% as well. So that bucket, 16%, 41% of the total claims. Now let's take a look at the at-risk. That would be the category with smoking, high blood pressure, and overweight, people who are at risk for much worse healthcare costs. The total there is about 20% of the population falls into that category. And in that category, that generates about 25% of the claims. So very different education, very different medications, very different thrust of what you would do to maintain those people at risk so that they don't fall into the chronic condition and certainly don't fall into the catastrophic, because that's a much, much higher cost. So that's three of the buckets. Let's take a look at the fourth bucket. That is, people are generally well. And we tend to sort of ignore these people because we want them to pay for everybody else. And we don't want anybody else to have to change or do better or get educated or get better treatments. We just expect the people who are well to pay for everything. So if you're in the wellness category, if you're younger and you're wellness, you wind up paying for everybody else's health care when you're doing the right things. But we certainly want to keep you in the well category. So different information again for what is needed for this population. So how many people are there? Well, the generally healthy actually represents about 48% of the population. And believe it or not, about 15%, an additional 15%, have no claims whatsoever during a year. Those are the very young and healthy, probably, you know, the 20-year-olds, the 30-year-olds. But that's actually represents about 63% of the total population are pretty under control with their health care. They are considered to be well. They may have some periodic things where they would go into an acute condition. They break an arm or a leg, or they have some minor condition that comes up, but then we get them back to wellness very rapidly. So what percentage of claims do they actually generate? Well, the whole group generates only about 12% of the claims. So 63% of the population generates only about 12% of the claims. So you can see how insurance companies leverage this. You can see how the government programs, see how Obamacare leverages this idea that there's a large population of people who have very little to no healthcare claims in a year, and yet they're made to pay high premiums to be able to cover everybody else, and there is no incentive for the everybody else's to actually improve their health status, to take their medication, to get educated about their condition. Because the reality is, if you can just move that population a little bit towards a healthier status to keep them out of the hospitals, the overall system will save a ton of money and lower the cost of insurance for everybody. Yes, there's always people who are healthy paying for people who are unhealthy. But the question is, how broad a range is that, and how much do you rely on the young people, on the healthy people, to pay for the old people or the unhealthy people who are really just not taking care of themselves when we could help them help themselves? That's the key, ultimately, to TrumpCare 2.0. Now, I want to come back in the next segment and give you the very specifics about how this would work in a free market structure that is very different from the Obamacare subsidized health insurance for everybody below a certain income level.
Hey, folks, this is Victor with the On Point with Victor show. Make sure you listen every Tuesday, 1 to 2, only right here on America's Web Radio, the On Point with Victor show. Remember, folks, I'm not angry. I'm just right. And you can find out why every Tuesday from 1 to 2, the On Point with Victor show, only right here on America's Web Radio.
Attention veterans, America's Web Radio has a contest just for you. We are giving away an AR-15 style weapon to a lucky veteran. If you are a veteran or active duty, you can enter for a chance to win by submitting an entry form at americaswebradio.com/giveaway. That's americaswebradio.com/giveaway. Please read the official rules for more information. Good luck, and thank you for listening.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the americasbroadcastnetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to America's Web Radio. Today we're talking about real healthcare reform possibilities. Once again, this faces the opportunity with an election coming up. Should the election go to President Donald Trump, I think we will see the possibility again, the proposals come out on free market health insurance reform something that would replace Obamacare, which the cost of has skyrocketed. The deductibles have expanded so that you feel like you have very little health insurance at the end of the day. Yes, you've got a piece of paper that says you've got a relationship with an insurance company, but when it comes to actually the cost of health insurance, not only the premium skyrocketing, but once you would have a claim, the deductibles are so large that it makes it really unaffordable to most people. So the core of what we're going to talk about today, and maybe over the next several weeks, is something totally different and the opposite of Obamacare, and that is risk segmentation. Now, neither politicians nor the insurance industry leaders are discussing a risk segmentation approach to establishing a free market health insurance approach. But why? Why wouldn't they do that? It's very logical to do it. It's because it upsets the status quo. Some argue it's not politically correct and could stigmatize the higher risk population. So what they're saying is if you actually identify those who are like catastrophic with cancers and brain injuries and burns, that you're somehow stigmatizing them. But what you're really doing is you're helping identify their unique needs. So it makes no sense to do that. And that's just sort of that woke mentality, that politically correct mentality that keeps us from actually offering up the health care that people need with the right kind of insurance products. Others say it's just too much like the system we had before Obamacare. Politicians seem to prefer a centralized one-size-fits-all approach. That's how we got Obamacare's single risk pool with everyone lumped together. So there's no benefit for somebody who does healthy things, wants to do healthy things to stay healthy, or people who are sick and want to do the right things to get healthy, to stabilize themselves, to avoid hospitalizations. There's no benefit for doing that. There's no benefit for employers who have group insurance. The small employer, there's no benefit for them for trying to encourage a healthy lifestyle or providing good information to their employees to stay healthy or stay out of the hospital. A single risk pool system is where everybody's program is based on everyone else's health risk. There's no differentiation based on health maintenance, lifestyle, treatment compliance, and sometimes not even age or gender. There's no financial benefit to being healthy, getting healthy, or staying healthy. That's the core of Obamacare. So how do we open up minds to new ideas and innovative solutions? Well, I once worked with Newt Gingrich, the former Speaker of the United States House of Representatives. And he used to say there are two ways to approach a problem. One, people have this mentality of no because. And second was yes if. The no because people want to protect the status quo and their personal interests. And you'll hear a lot of that as if we move towards private market, free market health insurance along the lines of Trump Care 2.0. People will just say, no, you can't do it because of all these reasons. Well, that mentality kind of shuts down the discussion, doesn't it? It means you really can't move forward. There's no way to provide creative solutions. And that, yes, if a person takes the same concerns and finds a solution, they think about, okay, this would work if we do this. And then they put their thinking hat on. They work with other people to come up with creative solutions, and they actually find solutions to the problem that they are seeking, in this case, healthcare. But if you just say, no, it can't be done because the industry won't like it, it won't be done because it's going to cost too much money, it can't be done because we'll never have the votes for it, that means it gets shut down right away and you never move to the next stage of actually creating something new and different. So if you're in a yes if person, if that's your mentality in listening to this program, you know, we can continue and you can gain control over your health and healthcare needs and interests by doing the right things if we just continue. So no matter, it could be a matter of life or death for you or your family if you listen to this podcast and take into account the idea that, yes, there are solutions, and I'm laying out one solution for Trump Care 2.0. And we're going to get into the exact details of how this would work, and it's really, it doesn't take a rocket scientist. But political health reform proposals are typically very confusing. And that's on purpose. It's what I call political sleight of hand. So don't be fooled by politicians and health industry lobbyists. They try to sound smart by purposely making things complicated. And I'll tell you how they do that. One trick they use is to point the finger of blame at someone else. Yes, we do have a dysfunctional healthcare system. Insurers blame hospitals and doctors. Hospitals blame insurers. Doctors blame lawyers. Employers blame non-compliant employees. And politicians blame other politicians, and so on and so on. The blame game goes on, and ultimately with no solution, because they don't know where to start. Another trick that they use is to propose comprehensive solutions. We see that in so many different areas, whether it's comprehensive solutions for immigration or comprehensive solutions for healthcare or comprehensive solutions for climate change, whatever it is, they will propose comprehensive solutions. In 2019, just a few years ago, healthcare spending represented about 18% of our gross domestic product. Any industry that large has lots of lobbyists and vested interests. They suggest comprehensive reforms. Now, comprehensive solutions include so many extra items that everybody is going to be against some part of a comprehensive solution. So again, nothing is done. So if you hear somebody talk about, well, we need a comprehensive solution, what they're really saying is we don't want to have any change at all, because whatever you propose, we're going to find enough people that are against various parts of it enough that they will vote against the entire package, and that will create public outcry because there's certain industry vested interests that you're stepping on. There are political interests that you're stepping on. There are provider interests that you're stepping on. So a comprehensive solution discussion to shut down the whole creative thinking towards an ultimate solution is just a political trick that happens so frequently. The third area is that they just assume that we're all just too stupid to understand the details. They use industry and political shorthand, a lot of letters that they put out, COB, CON, HGHP, CDHC, all sorts of things, and many more insider terms to reinforce that we couldn't, as citizens, as voters, we couldn't possibly understand the complexities of healthcare. So don't bother to propose anything. Well, I'm going to cut through that and say, no, this single individual out there with a lot of input over many years from various parts of the healthcare industry, I've put together a package that I think works for everybody and would be a solution that would be good as a starting point for the Trump administration to consider and create the yes-if solutions on top of this. Is it going to be perfect? Probably not. Is it going to be something everybody reads and says, oh, right away, we need to do this? Probably not. But it is a good start and gives us a foundation on which to build and to make changes that would be a good compromise for all the parties involved. So I want to lay this out in detail during the rest of this program and probably into next week. But so it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know the difference between health insurance and health care. While they're intertwined, health care is when one receives services from medical providers, doctors and hospitals is an example. Health insurance is how one finances medical services. So the health insurance reform that I'm suggesting, the Trump 2.0, should focus on private market coverages. There's about 196 million Americans that access health care through employer-sponsored health insurance or through individual health insurance policies. That's how you and I probably get our care, either from our employer or buying it individually. So whether it's an employer-sponsored or an individual coverage, we are all concerned about the cost of health care, of health insurance, the cost of health insurance, the coverage of pre-existing conditions, and our out-of-pocket expenses. And this is where Obamacare has failed. The cost of health insurance and the out-of-pocket expenses have soared. So two of the three items just have not worked under Obamacare. The only thing that's worked under Obamacare is the coverage for pre-existing conditions. And they pushed and pushed and pushed that concept, but they failed to address the cost of health insurance or the deductibles that have gone up so dramatically. So let's talk about what I'll call healthcare consumerism, TrumpCare 2.0, however you want to define it, personalized healthcare. You can use all those terms. Well, some would tell you that we've already tried a free market approach in the years before Obamacare. But pre-Obamacare insurance was not free market. You and I know that it was a bad system. Before Obamacare, the health care lobbyists had their way. The structure that they promoted included laws and regulations where consumers were powerless when seeking to purchase coverage. Insurance restricted providers and services patients could access. The cost and quality information was hidden from us. Individual consumers had no power to negotiate premiums or understand why they were rejected for coverage. And a few powerful insurers limited coverages, provided alternatives, plan choices, innovation, and pricing competition. That was the system we were under. We don't want that system anymore. None of what I'm suggesting as TrumpCare 2.0 would include those negatives that we had before Obamacare. We needed to make a change. Obamacare just happened to be the wrong change. So what you may not know is that the laws and regulations were mostly written by those insurance industry lobbyists. For those insiders, limited competition and market share drives the process. Consumer rights are minimized. We don't want to revert to that system. We can't let insurance industry lobbyists write the laws post-Obamacare. We'll only get shafted a second time. So this can't come from the insurance industry. Most major changes in any area of our economy come from disruptors on the outside. The insiders are not going to make any changes because they have protected vested interests. So if you're a consumer, you want something different. You don't want the insurance lobbyists to do it. You want an efficient free market that always responds to consumer demands for products, services, and information. That's the way it should be, and that's the system that we need to develop. And I want to get into and talk about the very specifics in our last segment coming up. After this next commercial, I want to outline how small group and individual insurance can be purchased a much more efficient way using the risk segmentation method and leaving out the insurance industry as other people, you and me, and supporters of the Trump administration redesign and refocus our health insurance and our health care services so that we get something that's affordable and doesn't have enormous out-of-pocket expenses, and it strengthens the provider-patient, the doctor-patient relationship. We'll be right back for the last segment.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
Attention veterans, America's Web Radio has a contest just for you. We are giving away an AR-15 style weapon to a lucky veteran. If you are a veteran or active duty, you can enter for a chance to win by submitting an entry form at americaswebradio.com/giveaway. That's americaswebradio.com/giveaway. Please read the official rules for more information. Good luck, and thank you for listening.
Veteran-owned, America's Web Radio would like to thank all of our incredible patrons. We wouldn't be able to do this without you. If you are not already a patron, you can help us continue to produce some of the most informative and entertaining shows on the internet by becoming a patron. Patrons of America's Web Radio are the first to receive information about new shows and links to the latest podcast episodes. Join now and receive a free gift while supplies last. For more information and to join our family, please visit www.patreon.com/americaswebradio. If you have questions, contact us at gm@americaswebradio.com. And as always, thank you for listening.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the americasbroadcastnetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to America's Web Radio, and we want to talk about in this last segment as much as we have time, describe how Obamacare is the wrong solution and TrumpCare 2.0 is the right solution for you and for me. Let's talk about how many of you out there are getting your insurance today, because there's two major ways that we're talking about reform and TrumpCare 2.0. Keep in mind that we're not talking about reforms at this point to Medicare or Medicaid. Medicare, our insurance programs, is a joint state and federal program that offered up to basically poor people, where Medicare is for the elderly. When you turn 65, you come under Medicare. I'm talking about the vast majority, the 176 million people in this country that are covered by either individual insurance or small group. And more of them are covered by small group than even individual. So let's start with the small group. If you're working for a small employer, and by small employer, I mean somebody who's probably at least under 100 lives. And let's consider the situation where you get that health insurance through the small employer, and it's what's called a fully insured product. In other words, the employer pays the money for insurance, you get your coverage, and it's not, the contrary to that would be a self-insured program, which most large employers do, but it's been trickling down to smaller and smaller employers. But let's talk about the traditional fully insured product. Obamacare requirements and state laws currently regulate both individual policies and small fully insured groups. Making small group insurance affordable has been a major challenge for decades. Before Obamacare, some states tried to mandate small group guaranteed coverage and community rating, that is the single risk pool concept. Single risk pools dump everybody together for calculating premiums. It does not matter if you're making efforts to stay healthy or not. It does not matter if you follow your doctor's treatment plans. It's a government-mandated one-size-fits-all approach. It especially raises premiums for young and healthy groups. That is what has happened with Obamacare. Consider the second major challenge with small groups, guaranteed issue. That may sound good on one level, but what does it mean? It means insurance is issued to every small group, regardless of any health condition of any employee or family member. States that adopted guarantee issue before Obamacare saw premiums soar. There were no limits on premiums, and small groups dropped coverage, so they became uninsured. There were greater numbers of uninsured as premiums rose to these unaffordable levels in certain states that had this guaranteed requirement for small groups. Obamacare adopted these same concepts, these same failed concepts. These are market distortions that fail to encourage coverage for all or produce lower premiums. We don't want to continue to go back to those failed approaches. The concepts were laudable. They tried to do good, but, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. But without the market balancing ideas of TrumpCare 2.0, they were doomed for failure. Let's talk about guaranteed issue, because that's a critical concept. We want to be sure everybody has coverage, universal coverage, under a free market conservative approach to health reform. So we must find a new way forward. One guaranteed issue? TrumpCare 2.0 is a balanced approach for small groups to get guaranteed affordable health insurance. Employees and family members of small groups suffering from serious chronic and persistent conditions can be accepted into an impaired health support plan. It'll be a special plan for those people that are either working or family members in a small group. The remaining group members then will have lower premiums. If you take out those high risks from small groups, the small group premium is going to be much less. If you have a serious health conditions, you'll get focused care with affordable subsidized premiums. So those people we would pull out of the small group plan would get subsidized premiums. We're already doing that for Obamacare. We can do it much more efficiently in a free market approach of allowing the small group to have lower premiums and then pull out those people and give them focused time and attention for whatever their condition is and keep their premiums low while lowering the premiums for those small employers. So segmenting seriously impaired risk from small groups would be a special service designed to meet the unique medical needs of those individuals. It would provide the extra help, information, and support needed to deal with impaired health conditions. Bottom line, everybody, regardless of health, gets affordable, guaranteed health insurance. Now let's talk about how we actually get to this affordable coverage. Most employers and family members, small group plans provide coverage much like individual policies. One major difference is that with group plans, the employer helps to pay the premium. So that's our group plans are already subsidizing their employer and many times the family member's health insurance costs. Within a small group, there might be one or more individuals with a serious medical condition that makes a plan member, employee, or family member uninsurable. This could affect the insurability of the entire group and or mean higher premiums to others in the group. So Trump Care 2.0 would allow otherwise uninsurable workers and family members to qualify for the same impaired health support plans we previously described. And I haven't gone through the details of it yet, but it's in the book, but has been described for uninsured individuals. So basically, we pull them out and treat them like uninsured individuals. So here's how you would get affordable small group insurance with guaranteed coverage. First of all, there are, again, a few areas of any small group plan that we can segment. And the segments that we would have for a small group are, one, let's assume that in a small group, all are insurable. All members of the small group plan are participating, are accepted by a participating insurer. So there's no subsidies for them. They're all insurable. The insurance company can ask some health questions of them, but they're all insurable. So you just get your coverage, and you're going to be a very affordable coverage at that point. If they're all insurable in a second bucket, initially the group is rejected, but after review by a new group I would set up, a health review authority, the entire small group is granted a certificate of guaranteed coverage. In other words, the insurance company says, no, I don't want to insure you. Well, now we're going to create a balance of power. Right now, the insurance companies would have all the power they did before Obamacare, and they basically do today. So now we're going to say, no, wait a second. We're going to empower the employer, the group members, if you will, by if an insurance company rejects them, we're going to have somebody look at that and say, was that a fair rejection or not? And if it's not a fair rejection, that group is going to get a certificate of guaranteed coverage that they then can take to any insurer that would have to give them health insurance coverage. They can't reject any life in there because it's already been determined that they are all insurable. Now let's take the third category that could happen, that some are uninsurable. Then this health review authority, which I'll describe in detail next week, provides uninsurable employees and family members of a small group access to an impaired health insurance support plan. That is, it would probably get state and federal subsidies, much less than is required today under Obamacare, but they would get a certain plan that would help them because they are identified with an impaired health status. And so they would get an impaired health support plan that wouldn't just give them coverage and let them go on their own way. It would have all the access to services of education, of medications, of all the things that could actually help stabilize them and give them the extra care and treatment that they really need. So I know that it may be difficult to conceptualize this, but let me sort of summarize it this way. In the first category I mentioned of employer health status, an employer with a small group or employees, generally 50 or fewer, it could be 100 or fewer, wanting a fully insured health plan for all employees can apply with limited underwriting, that is, they can ask some questions, to any participating insurer. They may then secure mutually agreed upon affordable coverage, the kind of coverage that they want, the mandate, the type of coverage, at discounted, standard, experience rated, or increased premiums. It would be a slightly increased premium if they've got some issues, but not a lot. The second category If a small group is insurable but is deemed or unable to negotiate acceptable coverage at a fair premium, they can submit an appeal to a public-private mediator, the Health Review Authority. If the insurance company's final offer is not considered acceptable by the Health Review Authority, the small group would be granted a certificate of guaranteed coverage. That coverage would include coverage for any and all pre-existing conditions as well. So the certificate can then be taken to any participating insurer that would be obligated to offer group health insurance at their standard rates or predetermined reasonable added cost not to exceed probably about 10% as determined by the Health Review Authority. So there could be some extra cost after that review, but it can't be more than 10%. Let's take the third category of status with a small employer group. Any member of the small employer group, employee or family member determined by the Health Review Authority to be truly uninsurable would be offered options under subsidized impaired health insurance plans. The remainder of the group then would be offered the certificate of guaranteed coverage. So it's a way of using that risk segmentation to get lower premiums for people who are being covered by the traditional health insurance, the small group plan. And for anybody who would otherwise be uninsurable or would have a high cost condition, that person would be pulled out and there would be some state or federal subsidies, again, much less than Obamacare. So we've got subsidies today, but we're not using it in a very smart way. This would allow us to have a really smart way of covering people and providing the care and treatment to stabilize their condition. If we could lower the costs of purchased health insurance for small groups, it would expand the opportunity for entrepreneurs to continue to develop small businesses out there. And for people who are family members or even employees of those small groups who have major health insurance problems, we can pull those out, provide the appropriate subsidy rather than subsidizing everybody like Obamacare does. We can very targeted subsidies to those who are in need of more health care than the general population and provide them the care and coverage that they need. So it's really as 1, 2, 3. It's easy as 1, 2, 3 to cover small group employers with affordable health care and provide guaranteed coverage, equalize the power relationship between insurance companies and that small employer group plan, and give everybody the type of coverage that they need, give them the choices and options that they need or want, and get us to a more effective health insurance system to subsidize the health care needs that those individuals or the small group in this case that we're describing would be able to access. So I know some of this is very complicated. Some of it may have been difficult to absorb on the first round of discussing this, but I want to get into this a little bit more in some future weeks. So I hope you'll come back and listen to the easy description. It doesn't take rocket scientist. It takes somebody who wants to upset the current marketplace, to go against the insurance companies, to go against the current politicians who really don't want to make any change, to go against the vested interest, to go against the lobbyists, against the lawyers, and develop a system that would be different. Now, everybody's going to say, well, some of these new organizations you mentioned sounds like too much government. Well, we've got tremendous amounts of government in the current system. We're going to have some sort of an oversight, some sort of a group that's probably a private public entity to help resolve some of these issues and create a more balanced marketplace than what we have today. So thank you for listening. I hope this was helpful. If you need to go back and listen to it again, please do. But I'll have more details about this in the coming weeks as President Trump seems like he is the standard bearer and his favorite even in general election at this point. So we'll see what happens. But Trump Care 2.0 seems like it's much more real today than it was even a month or two ago. Thank you for listening.
The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.